Welcome to Lead Follow, a podcast for pastors and leaders, hosted by MCUSA Executive Director Glenn Guyton. Join Glenn as he talks to folks across the denomination to help equip today's leaders who are leading while following Jesus.
I'm Glenn Guyton, and during this season of Lead Follow, we will be exploring ways to engage with youth and young adults from Gen Alpha to Gen Z. Today, I am pleased to welcome Reverend Dr. Sarah Ann Bixler, who will be discussing how we take a fresh look at faith formation. Well, Reverend Dr. Sarah Ann Bixler is the Associate Dean at Eastern Mennonite Seminary, and she also teaches formation and practical theology at Eastern Mennonite University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. She holds a PhD in practical theology, a Master of Divinity degree from Princeton Theological Seminary, and a bachelor's degree in English education from Eastern Mennonite University. Her scholarship explores attachment theory and adolescent belonging in faith communities. Sarah, along with her spouse Benjamin and their three children, are engaged in restorative work at their historic farm in Shenandoah Valley, a former plantation established by President Lincoln's great uncle. They attend Parkview Mennonite Church. All right, Sarah, how are you doing today?
Great to be here with you, Glenn.
All right, it's great to be here with you. You know, I always say that you're one of my favorite Mennonites, so it's always a pleasure talking to you. And we're going to start off with a question. If you could give your 13-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I love this question. Thanks for asking it. All right. In my reflection, here's what I would say. Be who you know yourself to be, deep down inside. God can open a way even if it isn't right in front of you now. The world is bigger than what you can see.
Oh, wow. The world is bigger than what you can see. Do you think that young people today kind of struggle with that, like being who they you know, that they feel like they are deep down inside?
So 13-year-olds today, I have one of them in my home,
have
a bigger world than what I did as a 13-year-old some 30 years ago.
Okay.
But I still think it's this incredible age of realizing that there's something more that's out there, whether young people are seeing that through social media or maybe through school and new social groups for the first time. It's a time of world kind of opening and enlarging for many 13-year-olds. And that was the case for me, too.
Okay. Well, we want to talk about some of your thoughts. You are the expert here. You know, just great to see those things in your bio. But you recently wrote an article, Tending the Ecology of Faith Formation. And so you wrote about faith formation shifting from a communal task to more of an individualistic approach. So can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So one of the points I'm trying to make in this article in the Leader magazine is that when we try to solve one problem in the church, we often create another, if not problem, maybe another shortfall, another way we don't quite live up to what we're hoping to.
Okay.
So when we try to strengthen our ministries in one area, there are ripple effects. There might be unintended consequences. So it's this continual process, and this is what I think faith formation is and should be in Anabaptist Mennonite congregations. It's a continual process of paying attention and discerning what's our next step, what's our next faithful action or approach for young people as we're experiencing them in this time and place. Their needs might be a little different from the needs of the previous generation, but we want to help instill that authentic sense of faith for young people, who they are uniquely, and also the social context they find themselves in. So when I wrote about a shift I observe from a communal task to a more individualistic approach, what I'm reflecting on is really the ways that in centuries past, in many Mennonite communities in North America, Young people were formed in faith just as a natural part of participating and observation in congregational life and in the activities of a community.
Yeah.
There's been a shift in the 20th century to pulling them out.
Oh.
So pulling kids out for kids out of worship for something else. Maybe we have all these great curricula that are written by professional educators that are targeted to specific age groups. So while we're trying to provide something that's relevant and attentive to young people, there's been some unintended consequences, I think. And that is that there's less of that communal formation. One of the things I love so much about our Anabaptist tradition is that we value both community and individual authenticity. And so I want to keep our attention on this balance. Yeah. I don't want us to lose that.
Yeah, that's great. And I kind of have some mixed feelings about that, you know, coming from a youth ministry background. Hey, and if you all didn't know, Sarah used to be my youth pastor.
That's right.
She was actually the conference youth pastor when I was a youth minister. So she helped bring together the youth leaders from a Virginia conference. So I always appreciate Sarah for her role in that. But yeah, you know, it's a weird thing, right? Pulling these kids out. And I mean, you mentioned the 20th century, but now I think about, it's been a while since I've been a youth pastor, but now I think about where we are post COVID, right? And we're even more isolated. Yeah. And one of the concerns I had as a youth pastor was that people looked to me to do the work of the community, right? They wanted Men Glenn, that's what they called me, Men Glenn, Minister Glenn, to pretty much raise their children. And they always wanted to kind of get rid of their kids. I mean, and I'm not saying that in a negative way, but it's kind of like, hey, well, you know, we're going to put the kids over there and you're going to do a good job with them. And then we're going to have our church over here. So that is something I think that is lacking when we always pull kids out, that they don't get to participate in big church or they don't get to serve alongside adults. Yeah. Those are some of the things I tried to incorporate in my youth ministry, is to make sure that we had youth volunteers in regular adult type ministry roles, because how else are they going to learn? How else are they going to pick up some of those things? You know, I think a lot of learning happens maybe through osmosis. Kids are paying attention. They're watching us. They're listening to us. And even when we aren't teaching them, we are teaching them.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much teaching and learning that happens in the whole life of the community.
Yeah.
Not just in those moments that we might label as Sunday school or Christian education.
Yeah. So how do we get back to that balance, Sarah? You know, again, think about now we have, you know, remote church, Zoom church. Many congregations don't have Sunday school anymore, which I think is a big loss. So how do we get back to that balance? What advice would you have for us?
Yeah, well, I think it's in the practices of resisting isolation. You mentioned that in our reality, as we have experienced COVID as a society and as congregations, the level of isolation has increased. And this was a problem before COVID, but COVID exacerbated it.
Yeah.
And so we need to continue being attentive. What are the network connections? What are the cross-cutting relational ties that we are developing between people, between age groups, between those in the congregation who have different perspectives, have different life experiences? So this is something that is good for everybody in the faith community. Adults need those cross-cutting ties. Children, adolescents, young adults need those cross-cutting ties. So the more we can be attentive to what those might be, I think the better we'll resist this isolation that people are experiencing. And I think people still come to church because they see it as an opportunity to resist this isolation. They come for the community and for that networking in the community of faith that they get from it.
Yeah, I know you made reference to a faith ecosystem, and I think that what I'm going to say what I think it is, and then you can tell me what you meant. But yeah. You know, I think about this ecosystem or the circle of life and how everything kind of feeds into the other thing, right? And I think that we forget that in the church often about this ecosystem, because when budgets get tight or when staffing gets tight, what do? We start cutting like youth programs, because I guess we feel like the young people don't deserve like their own like separate stuff, or it's not important because they're not the tithers or they're not the ones that are voting. But if you cut off like one part of this ecosystem, what's going to feed, you know, the adults, right? These kids have to get older. They're going to be the ones that are going to be leading the church in the future. So if we cut off that part of the ecosystem, what happens?
Mm-hmm. Right. So here again, we're trying to solve one problem, budget constraints, for instance. Right. And then we end up creating another problem altogether. So to think about, okay, if we follow through with this decision, who is it going to impact? And what are our priorities for a congregation around faith formation of all ages? So it's really important to pay attention to that. We can't anticipate everything that's going to result from our decisions, but we can think really carefully and intentionally about what's important, what do we value, and what do different people in our congregation need? How can we meet those needs for faith formation? So I think of this ecosystem as recognizing that things are interconnected, and it's not, I don't even think it's possible to chop off one ministry of the church or one program of the church in sort of a clean break in that way. So just recognizing that the more we can build these interconnections between people, across ministries and programs, the stronger that whole system will be to support the faith formation of our young people. Remembering that nurturing faith formation is a communal process.
Yeah.
It's not just the job of the youth minister, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. So we can't cut the youth minister's time, for instance, in isolation from this whole broader network, this whole broader system.
Yeah, I could go really deep into the whole professional clergy thing, but that's probably a different conversation. But but I do think it is short-sighted, and I've experienced this even in, you know, Mennonite Church USA, as we think about like conference leadership. At one point, every conference, and again, you were my youth pastor, but every conference had a conference youth minister.
Right.
That was one of the first positions to go, and I think. Now, I know this is not the only factor, but as I think about our conventions, I think about the connectedness of some of the new generations. I think that that's a really important link that was severed. You know, people talk about, oh, what happened to youth convention? Like, how come young people aren't engaging? Well, I think part of it is because, I mean, it's a number of factors, but one of the factors is that disconnect between the conference youth minister who could kind of mobilize young people, mobilize other leaders, and where we are, you know, now we don't have that connection, and the senior pastor may or may not be in touch with what's going on with the young people. Volunteers may not be as connected. I mean, I think volunteers are fine, but sometimes in organizations like this, you need someone to kind of, you know, mobilize the community, to kind of organize the community. And so now we've eliminated kind of that position, and I just think it's kind of short-sighted. You know, we want to want these short-term savings, but now long-term, I think we're going to struggle with faith formation, with identity, people understanding who we are as Anabaptists, young people getting to know other young people in their community. I think that we've injured ourselves unintentionally.
Yeah, it's like if you imagine this whole faith formation ecosystem like a net.
Yeah.
If you cut one thread, it starts pulling away at other places.
Oh, yeah.
So you think you're going to be improving something or having savings here in this one spot, but then you realize, oh, that was connected to a whole bunch of other things. And now there's a whole series of holes showing up in our net.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a good message. You ought to, that'll be a sermon. You should take that on the road. You know, and it's, you know, I think about, you know, again, you, Sarah, like my son worked for you at convention is something that he remembers, you know, it, again, that's part of that community, right? Him coming to youth convention, volunteering, helping you out. Yeah. I think it's an important part of his faith formation, you know, and it's not just one thing, but it's just a series of things like mm-hmm. that where, you know, and I was intentional about that, exposing my kids to working in ministry, to what's going on, to exposing mm-hmm. them to different people, empowering them to utilize their gifts. I think he first started as the microphone runner. He was in the sixth grade. He was running microphones back and forth. And then eventually, you know, helping you and in having an increasing role in these things.
Yeah.
We need to do that, I think, as part of mm-hmm. our faith formation journey, equipping with our own kids.
Yeah, to build those relational networks for young people, that's part of building that ecosystem around them. And then I see Alex at other conventions and I check in on how he's doing. I think I wrote him a reference for a job one time.
Okay, all right.
So there are all these, all these beautiful ways in which those connections can still grow.
Yeah.
I think of my own son who's 17, he was just baptized last week at Parkview Mennonite Church. In his faith statement, he talked about his ongoing challenge to integrate faith and science.
Oh, wow.
And he's mentioned this before in the congregation. And I see older folks in the church, many of them who are retired from careers that were related to science, have sought him out to say, I've had those questions too.
Okay.
And they connect with him on that. And he sees, oh, there's somewhere that I can fit, that I can relate. And he's building these relationships with people in the faith community that strengthen his faith and give him those lasting connections.
Yeah. And so if you could talk to, and you are talking to them, but if you could talk to pastors at churches, leaders of churches, what tips would you give them, or what ways would you encourage them to create these environments so that we do build a healthy ecosystem?
Yeah. So much of it relies on those organic connections. Mm-hmm. People paying attention to younger ages within mm-hmm. the congregation.
Yes.
So there's a leadership function here.
Okay.
As I train pastoral leaders at Eastern Mennonite Seminary and talk with other folks in workshops and things, I emphasize it as a leadership role, but it's also important for everybody in the congregation to see faith formation as their job as well.
Okay.
So always being attentive to making those connections within the congregation across generations. Mm-hmm. So intergenerational interaction is just key. And I think it's an important way that adults then can model what a whole life of engaged and authentic faith is like. So sometimes I'm afraid, for instance, that young people are seen as being the only ones with questions, the only ones who are exploring faith, right, or who are trying to figure faith out as it integrates with their life.
Right.
Adults are doing this too. And so I think the more that adults can bear witness to the ways that they are continuing to be formed in their faith, the mm-hmm. ways that they're continuing to pursue questions that come up through different life experiences, that shows, it sets a model for young people to realize, okay, the things that I'm wondering and discovering about faith, this is going to be an ongoing process through my life journey. It's not like I get to age 25 and I have it all figured out. And then also to have this ecosystem of people surrounding our young people, mm-hmm. this ecosystem of people who are there to journey alongside young people who, as they continue to have those questions.
Yeah. I think that intergenerational piece is key. And it's life given to both groups. Like you said, like older people, I have more questions now that I'm older. When I was younger, I had it all figured out. Like I knew what everybody should do. I knew why everybody was wrong. Yeah. And now I'm like, man, I have so many more questions now at this point of my life. And and so I think that's important. And then you talk about modeling behavior, which I don't think we do a good job in the church, you know, because we feel like we have to be perfect. We have this unhealthy purity culture, I think, sometimes in the church.
Yeah,
we don't let kids ask questions, right? Questions that are mm-hmm. probably like, why are you asking that kind of question? Now, you know, how dare you ask that question? Mm-hmm. No, let the kids ask those questions. Like it's some point in our formation where we stop asking questions. I don't know, maybe it's like 3 years old or 4 years old, because then we find out, oh, they don't like it when I ask those kind of questions.
Yeah. Right?
And then we stop asking them. And then when you get 50, I guess, I don't know, I'm 50 now. So I'm thinking like, I'm going to ask those questions now. So it's like a gap, a period of time where we get so uncomfortable questioning, you know, our faith, questioning, you know, asking God why, right? I don't know. I've experienced a lot of things recently as a 50 plus year old now that you kind of question like, oh yeah, like, why is this happening? Why do we go through these things?
Right. I think we need to think about faith formation as having an approach that is expansive enough to be able to flex with us mm-hmm. throughout our lives. So sometimes I worry about approaches. We're talking about youth and young adults today, but it really starts in childhood faith formation. You talked about the three-year-old who asks questions and is kind of trained out of that.
Yeah.
So how we can continue to keep alive a spirit of wonder and of questioning that young children naturally have, and to balance teaching scripture, life principles, mm-hmm. our Anabaptist beliefs and values, but to do so in such a way that when questions come through whatever life experiences we go through, we have a foundation that's flexible enough to grow with us. Because if it's too rigid, then when we come up against crisis or some kind of experience that doesn't fit, really, the only option is for that faith to shatter. Ooh, and it's really hard to put those pieces back together as an adult if that happens. So we need something that's flexible and expansive that holds together, that there's something to it, but that can just grow with us on our journey of faith.
Well, that's good stuff. So faith formation for youth and young adults starts when they're three. I mean, that's one thing. Start early, right? You got to start early. But so you said something, you know, about flexing. Mm-hmm. And so what do we do then if we've created this inflexible faith, and once when they get in their 20s, you know, maybe later teenage years, it starts to shatter. What do we do then? That's a tough question. But what do we do then?
Yeah, so this is where I think we see young people leaving the church behind. Mm. They say, I've grown out of that, and it's not a place where I can find myself, I can be myself anymore. So one of the things that I love about Mennonite Church USA is that we continue to try to make space for congregations that are at many different places.
Okay, all right.
Well, one of the things that I appreciate is that young people, even though they might not find one of their own congregations of mm-hmm. their early childhood as a place where they can still find themselves.
Yeah.
There might be another congregation within the tradition.
Okay.
Where they can. I also think people, again, here I'm stressing the intergenerational relationships.
Yeah.
There are people within congregations who can sometimes speak to those experiences of having something happen that shattered their faith.
Yeah.
And they were able, with the support of a community, to put it back together again. Sometimes I think we need to be really honest about our struggles and our challenges in front of young people so that they realize, oh, if and when that happens to me, there's somebody I can go to who will yeah. understand something of what I've been through.
Yeah, yeah. And that's great. And I think you've, you know, I've noticed some things in your life. You know, I've known you for a while, some things that you've been very transparent about, you know, losses yeah. with you and your family.
Yep.
You know, I try to be pretty transparent. I think people say I'm a pretty transparent leader.
Yes.
You know, even with my own kids, though, just trying to say, hey, look, these are things that I've struggled with. You know, these are things that yeah. that, mm-hmm. that challenge my faith. Mm-hmm. You know, as your dad, you know, and as a husband, those things I try to share it with my kids, especially my son. I do share stuff with my daughter, but we're a lot alike. So she kind of like, I knew everything at 26, 25. She's like that. My son's a little bit more empathetic, I would say. they're both great kids, but yeah.
And that's the gift of a community of faith, right?
Yeah.
We can be with our own children, those of us who are parents,
yeah.
in different ways. Some of those connections are stronger in certain areas, yeah. and it we don't have to do it all.
Yeah.
Other people who can speak into their lives and who can come alongside them in ways that we can't.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, that is the importance of community. So, you know, yeah. so parents, you know, if you have parents listening to this, that's the benefit of being a part of a faith community and having your kids connected. Because I think part of it is if you are part of these communities, that's sometimes you're amazed, I think, at the outcomes. Like, I'm amazed at, you know, both of my kids are amazed at where they are in their faith journey,
yes.
how they articulate faith. And I said, I don't know if I had, you know, I don't know. I wonder how much I had to do with that, right? Like, where did they get this from? Like, they're beyond where I was at that age. But I do mm-hmm. think it's part of that that community. And then yeah. I know when I was a youth pastor, I would often say, well, man, the kids that really connect with me, the kids that really enjoy youth ministry are the ones I feel like they don't need me. They have these strong parents.
Yeah.
But I think it goes to your thought of this community, right? It's people yes. from all sides kind of connecting with them. And I think if we do it right, we build these lifelong relationships, even if they're exactly. a part of the church or not. I mean, I still work with some of my kids. I say all my kids are like 40 years old now. That's how long I've been doing like youth ministry, but they're like 40 years old. Like, so I still have some of those connections mm-hmm. that started when they were, you know, high schoolers, middle schoolers, and things like that. But being yeah. a part of that faith community, so my life is better for it, right? I feel like I had some purpose in my life as a mentor, and I think these young people reflect fondly on it as they've grown, and now they're developing their own kids and helping them be a part of the community.
Yeah, it goes both ways, like yeah. you say.
Yeah, it's like that circle of life. It's the
yes.
it's the circle of faith formation.
Yes.
So as you think about, do you have any other advice for congregations dealing with young people, like some practical things that you think that they should maybe consider or maybe add back to the community of faith?
Yeah, I encourage a perspective that takes into account the journey of faith as a lifelong process. So sometimes I think, especially in the Anabaptist tradition, where we have a strong focus on an age of accountability, okay. we invest a lot in many of our communities in Mennonite education. Some congregations still have ministry staff or volunteers who are dedicated specifically to working with youth and youth groups or in middle school and high school. And all of those are good and important things for us to be focusing on the period of adolescence,
right,
and formation there. But we also, I think, need to keep in mind that this is one important part of a whole lifelong journey of faith.
Yeah. Okay.
So that there are many young adults for whom they need a little bit of time away from their congregations or away from their communities of origin. And that's part of their journey. And that doesn't mean that they no longer need connections or want connections. So to remember, to take a long view, to remain connected. I think about, like you, Glenn, some of those young people who I was youth minister alongside when they were in high school, and they spent some years away from the congregation. And now I hear them talking about how they're finding ways to reconnect. I think it's important to sustain those relationships because you never know what the whole journey of faith is going to look like.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we have to plant those seeds and, you know, I think it's a Bible verse about that, you know, about planting seeds and, you know, maybe somebody else
might water them for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. We might just have to plant those seeds and again, don't be mad if these kids kind of go off and find their way. And, but I think if we've done a good job and built a good foundation, they'll come back, right? They'll come back. It may not be to your congregation. It might not even be to the Mennonite church, but they'll come back.
In some way.
Yeah, to their faith. So I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for your wisdom. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And we're going to get ready to wrap up here. But for the latest news and events from Mennonite Church USA, please subscribe to Piecemeal, our weekly email newsletter at MennoniteUSA.org/piecemeal. We also ask that you prayerfully consider supporting the ongoing work of Mennonite Church USA's ministry at MennoniteUSA.org/give. Thank you all so much for joining us today.